Hello, my name is Karen Guglielmo, the executive editor for the CIO IT Strategy Media Group at TechTarget, and I'd like to welcome you to today's expert podcast on Windows 7, an operating system for business. I'd like to first welcome today's speaker, Michael Cherry, Research VP, Operating Systems at Directions on Microsoft, an independent analyst firm focused exclusively on Microsoft. Before joining Directions, Michael was an employee of Microsoft for more than 10 years, where he held a variety of technical and marketing positions, including program manager for Windows Embedded and Windows 2000 in Telemirror. He also worked as a technical evangelist for Microsoft's Developer Relations Group, advising independent software vendors with enterprise resource planning and accounting products on how to exploit Microsoft's platforms for their products. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you.
And as I mentioned earlier, we're here today to talk about Windows 7, an operating system for business. Michael will spend the next 10-plus minutes discussing the features, compatibility issues, and benefits of Windows 7 most likely to be of interest to the business. So, Michael, let's get started.
Sure. The place I like to start is just to discuss for a moment where Windows 7 lies in terms of, is it a major release or is it an intermediate release? You know, where does it sort of fit on that scale? Because I think that scale is important. And I think to be a major release, an operating system has to have some level of architectural or foundational difference between the new release and its precursor. And one of the good things about Windows 7 is that is not the case. There is no architectural change. And this is good. You don't want two major architectural changes in a row because architecture, like concrete, needs time to cure. And so Microsoft, I think, is making a bit of a mistake here because they keep saying this is a major release. It's a major release. And I keep thinking that the word they really want is important. It is an important release. There are some really good things in this. And particularly when you look at the perception that Vista is bad and Windows Server is good because they both use the same code base. So what's the difference? The difference is in the perceptions. Server also uses roles to control what's installed. And, you know, that wouldn't be a bad idea for Windows 8. You know, imagine a Windows for consumers where there was a game role and a business role, and a home role, or a consumer or entertainment role. So a lot of my early thinking about Windows 7 and a lot of my review was based around looking at the changes. And I noticed that many of the changes were directly addressing some of the negative perceptions or barriers that customers had to using Vista. So in some cases, these barriers are removed by just the passing of time. So, for example, more applications are now compatible with the architectural changes that they made. In other places, they've actually gone back in and re-engineered pieces or added features to make it better. So what were some of those barriers that people had? Well, the first one was probably poor application compatibility. A lot of the applications people used on Windows XP didn't run well on Windows 7. A lot of the device drivers that people used with hardware that worked with XP didn't work well with Vista. And that comes back to the architectural change. The architectural change was significant between XP and Vista. And that's why some of this occurred. Now, with Windows 7, there really is less changes, and therefore most applications that work on Vista should work on Windows 7 without any changes. So why do I say most instead of all? The answer lies in the fact that some low-level software, antivirus is an example, or imaging software that makes can make a ghost image of an entire hard drive, that kind of low-level software that works sort of directly with the hardware at a very, very low level, often that software is the ones that get, you almost have to buy a new release of that kind of software with each release. But your desktop applications, your corporate applications, if they run with Vista, they will probably run with Windows 7. So user account control was another barrier. People felt it was too obtrusive. Now, this is a sort of a strange barrier, because on one hand, Microsoft was doing the right thing. They really needed to make this change to Windows. It was an important change for security purposes. But what we can kind of argue with Microsoft about, and why the perception is so bad, is it's the way they implemented it. And that was very obtrusive. In early days of running Vista, before a lot of the applications were fixed, you would receive these messages basically asking you to confirm that you were going to do something all the time. I mean, they were just constantly popping up. And so the Windows team has worked hard to ensure that if you want to use user account control, and I would say that you do, that you find it far less obtrusive. It will only interrupt you for additional permissions when it truly needs to. Another perception that people have, and it's very common, is they say that Windows is too bloated, that over the years it has grown too big, and now it is it takes up too much space, it's too slow on their processors, and it just is larger than it needs to be. And I think Microsoft has started to look at this, and what we're seeing is that a lot of the entry-level applications, so for example, Movie Maker, the email service, the calendar, Windows Mail, they have been removed from the OS, and they're now available. If you want them, you may download them from Windows Live. We think some OEMs will pre-install them as well, but you have a choice of getting a far sort of slimmer and trimmer version of Windows. People also complain that Windows starts too slowly, and you know, this is true of all the operating systems these days. They almost all lie to us. They give us the appearance, you know, they'll draw the background. They'll load the image of the desktop really, really quickly. But as soon as you click on something, you'll get a cursor that basically tells you to wait. So you're teased into thinking it's starting fast. But the reality is it isn't started until you can do something. Like in my case, in the morning when I start a computer, my opinion, it's not started until I can get into email and read my email. So what they've done is they've changed the service control manager. This is an automatic tool within the operating system which starts many of the services that you need to have running on the OS. And in the past, you could either start these services manually or you could have them start automatically. The problem with automatic was they all started when you powered on the machine. So they've added a new way to trigger services starting where certain events, such as joining the Active Directory domain or plugging a printer into a plug-and-play port or a camera into a USB port, will trigger the services related to that printer or that camera to start up. For businesses, I think a key factor was security. And I was surprised. I thought Vista was going to do better in the market than it did. And that was because it contained a technology called BitLocker. BitLocker allows you to encrypt the hard drive. We've all seen these headlines. It happens about once a month where some organization has a laptop either stolen or more likely simply misplaced. The number of laptops that are left at security checkpoints in airports on a daily basis is astounding. But BitLocker's job was to ensure that if you did lose control of your PC, no one could access your files. They might own the physical hardware at that point, but they would have to completely redo it, repartition the hard drive, reinstall an operating system, and they would never be able to get at your data. However, BitLocker, while it was available in the higher editions of Windows, was very complicated to set up. You had to change the partitioning of your hard drives. It just was awkward to install. There was a lot of confusion about it. In addition, it uses a trusted platform module, which is not installed in all of the computers. So now those are more available, and BitLocker works very cleverly now. I mean, it's pretty much transparent to get it installed. In addition, there's a feature called BitLocker to Go, which allows you to extend the BitLocker protection to removable USB flash drives. So the last part, or the last big barrier, is that there were no features for business. Fista was really almost seen as a, you know, interesting for consumers if it had been a success, but businesses were sort of saying, why should we bother? And to address that kind of concern, to make sure there is something for business, Microsoft has added direct access and branch cache into Windows 7. Direct access provides for better connections for remote workers. So it's kind of a VPN on steroids already included in the OS. Branch cache makes it much more efficient for organizations that have a branch office, and they can minimize the movement of documents between the headquarters and the branch office, because the majority of documents needed in the branch office are likely in the cache. Finally, they also included virtual PC with Windows XP mode. This is designed specifically for businesses, so that if there is an application that the business still needs to use, and that application has not been updated since XP, so the application runs on XP, but it will not run on Vista or Windows 7, business customers will be able to run it in the virtual PC with the Windows XP mode. So, you know, those are kind of the way I look at the operating system. It's important, and the reason I think that enterprise or business customers should look at it is because it has removed these barriers or these concerns that they may have had.
Thank you, Michael. I do have one question for you, though. Why is Microsoft licensing often so confusing for users?
Well, Microsoft has a tendency to use a new release as an opportunity to revise the licensing terms and conditions. And in this case, with Windows 7, they've done it again. And there's some things that, you know, it's a mixed bag. Some things are better than before. Some things are worse than before. But in general, what you have to be aware of is they're different. And the problem is it's complicated by a number of factors, including what you're running today, whether or not the OS you're running today is covered by software assurance, and then where do you want to get to? What version of Windows 7 do you want to get to? And it's so hard, because when you do these kind of discussions, the questions you get are very specific to an organization's needs, and it's just too hard to kind of cover in a global sense. And that's why Directions on Microsoft has put together some licensing boot camps, where we can take the time to go over all the intricacies and all the Byzantine rules about licensing.
Okay, and on that note, that does conclude today's podcast. And again, if you'd like to hear more from Michael on this topic or other related Microsoft licensing topics, you can attend a licensing boot camp hosted by Directions on Microsoft. Just visit www.directionsonmicrosoft.com and click on the link to the licensing boot camp box in the right column of the homepage. And thanks again to Michael Cherry for speaking with us today. And thank you all for listening. Have a great day.